Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. For more information, visit emmyusa.com. Borders seem to be all over the news lately. You've got trade wars, Brexit, and of course, Trump's wall. This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring how borders are created and blurred in the world of food.
We try to focus a lot on the fact that they are chefs by nature, that the refugee thing is just a status for them.
And after the Soviet space ended, I don't think there was much research. It was all considered just Soviet food or Russian food, and I don't think it gives a lot of those cultures credit.
Tune in to this week's Meat and Three on Heritage Radio Network. That's meat plus sign THREE. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, and welcome to A Hungry Society. I'm Korsha Wilson, and this is the show where we talk about food, food media, and so much more. I'm very excited about this show because it's the first in a two-part series highlighting Peru and Peruvian chefs. I had the incredible, wonderful opportunity to travel to Peru last year with World's 50 Best and learn about the incredible foodways there and meet some of the country's most talented chefs. It was absolutely life-changing, and I had some of the best food in my entire life on the trip. And one of my favorite restaurants was Statera in Lima, Peru. And the chef there is Andre Patsias. He's worked in some of the world's best kitchens, including Noma, Astrid and Gaston, and Central, run by Virgilio Martinez in Lima, who's considered to be one of the best chefs in the world. Andre was only 26 years old when he opened Statera, and it's already become one of the best restaurants in Lima and in the country. It's seriously amazing. And he's blending indigenous Peruvian ingredients with modern techniques. I'm so excited to have him on the show today. Andre, welcome to A Hungry Society.
Hello, Portia. It's a pleasure being with you right now.
And you are actually... It's good. It's going really well. It's cold and rainy here. What's it like in Lima?
Oh, it's really hot right now. We're in summer season. Around 35 degrees today, so it's really, really hot.
I'm really excited to have you on the show. You are our first international caller.
It's an honor for me, Korsha. Definitely. Really,
yeah.
Thankful for this opportunity, and thanks a lot.
And you're actually in the restaurant right now. Are you getting ready for dinner?
Yes, I'm actually ending lunch service. Mm-hmm. I'm in the office at the second floor right now. It's been a really crazy day today. Mm-hmm. We've been like overbooked for lunch, for dinner service, and it's actually we're doing really good here. There's a lot of work, a lot of energy to be used, and really happy.
So in the intro, I talked about Statera and how you use Peruvian ingredients. How do you describe Statera to people who haven't been there?
Statera definitely has a proposal where we travel a lot around the region. We have many different places across Peru, from the highland lagoons, the rainforest, the desert, the mangroves, many different kinds of ecosystems, which make our food very diverse. And we as a chefs take advantage of that. So nowadays, the menu that we have, the one you ate, mm-hmm. they are 8 different regions in Peru: the mangroves, the desert, the highlands, the Amazonic rainforest, the deep sea, the coastland, and the altiplanic lagoons. No, so it's very informative, in which we forage different kinds of ingredients and produce, and we focus a lot to bring to the table produces that have never been sown or met here in Peru. You know, mm-hmm. so And we combine this with all the trips that we make. We've done for this first menu 28 different flights in Lima region, in Peru region. So there's a lot of investigation, conceptualization, and deep work, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a multidisciplinary team that challenges us every day, you know.
Yeah, so, you know, you're speaking about the different regions of Peru, and Peru is so diverse in terms of landscape and geology. We got to go to the highlands of Peru, which was so incredible, and is like where you source some of your ingredients from, right?
Exactly. I work in a collaboration with a family that, well, it's actually a group of families that own this land at more than 5,600 meters above sea level in a region called Jauja in Huancayo City, which is at the central south of Peru on the highlands. And it's actually really difficult to get there. It's extreme altitude. It's really hard to breathe. It's really hard to walk.
I remember that. It was very hard to breathe.
Exactly. It's really hard, you know, but that makes it for us much more interesting, you know, more adventure, you know, a bit more of adrenaline. We met these families, and now we're working in a collaboration in which we support them, helping them, we support them with knowledge and definitely some and buy the produces that we want them to harvest. That probably they are not sending to Lima these small potatoes or these small tubers because for them they are too small and they don't see a profit on them. But for us, they are gold, you know, for the mm-hmm. pressure, for the tasting menus, you know, for our menus. So we make this alliance and we're now helping them to develop. And it's mutual, you know, because they are also helping us to develop and grow as a restaurant and as a gastronomic proposal. So we are a lot in this kind of collaborations, which is actually the hardest job in this kind of restaurant, you know,
mm-hmm.
where the producers are the stars, and they're really hard to get them in, you know, and we have to make a lot of these alliances and a huge social impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to make our gastronomy grow and as a restaurant and also as persons.
That was one of my favorite things about getting to, you know, spend time with you and the other chefs is seeing how much there's this culture of celebrating the ingredients, but also recognizing the people that grow the ingredients and making sure that they're taken care of and they can feed their families. And it's this like beautiful ecosystem of people supporting each other.
Exactly.
So
very important. It's a priority nowadays.
Mm-hmm. So when you go into Statera and you sit at your table, there's these beautiful centerpieces that have, crustaceans in them and tubers and moss and, you know, branches, and it represents all these different ecosystems that are part of Peru. And then as you eat through the tasting menu, you get to travel to all these different sections of Peru. One of my favorite dishes was the dish inspired by the mangroves
with
Can you describe that dish?
Yeah, so basically, that dish was talking about the centerpieces. I normally put the produce that we're going to have on the tasting menu and try to create a small vision of the menu, a short and quick vision of the menu with the different produces that we're going to have, the ones that we don't know. Because it's very important, apart from telling a story and about from serving food, for us to know more, no, about what are we eating, you know, and give a bit more of value to our work on researching and bringing the produces, you know. So this dish of the mangrove was developed when in one of our last journeys with me and my team to the north of Peru, to the mangroves, in which we find the mangroves in Peru are exactly under the equator line. So it's actually really, really, really hot and humid, very tropical. So in this place, we found these shellfish that were lying underneath the mangroves, mm-hmm. between the mud and the woods and branches. And when the tide was low, the sea tide was low, you had the opportunity to dive and extract the shellfish, no? But they were really hot. And the interesting part is that they are used to this climate. So if you put them on the fridge, they'll die. You must keep them underneath a room temperature, outdoor, so they can still alive for 6, 7 until 10 days. So I thought that was amazing. And I brought them alive in my pack, in my luggage, I remember.
You put them in your luggage?
From the north of Lima, yeah. It was crazy because they were alive. And I keep them on my roof, on my rooftop of the restaurant, between the where I keep my edible flowers, and I have my small garden. Mm-hmm. And I kept them there, and they stay alive for a week.
Wow.
And between the lapsus, this edible plant came from the highland. A supplier brought us. They are called lentejas verdes, so it's like green chickpeas. But they are normally known here in Peru as like a seaweed, a wheat that kills the environment of the lagoons, mm-hmm. because they just grow on the top of the lagoon and they absorb all the light and it kills the algae at the bottom of the sea because they don't get any light. No? But mm-hmm. they have a huge amount of protein, more than soy. The soybeans, you know. So they arrived and I developed this dish of the biggest mangroves in the world with the highest lagoon in the world, you know. So it was pretty interesting making this kind of produce that they will never see their faces in any normal or common day. And we make a nice marriage there and try to compose and develop like a new ecosystem, which was really interesting and challenging for us.
When you...
The shellfish from the mangrove and the seaweed and the algae from the highland lagoons. Mm-hmm.
When you are creating a dish, does that come into your mind as soon as you see the ingredient, or do you take it back... do you take an ingredient that you're unfamiliar with? Do you take it back to the kitchen and like conceptualize a dish after playing around with it? Like, when does inspiration strike?
Yeah, definitely. We have already established process, a creative established process. Actually, I am sitting down in my office and I am making the new tasting menu right now, which is changing dramatically the concept. Mm-hmm. But. About talking, I have a process that any produce that arrives to the restaurant, we work them in around 20 different ways, between 15 or 20 different ways. For example, yesterday a cactus arrived, and I first peel the cactus, try the cactus with the skin, without the skin, freeze it, mm-hmm. melt it, mm-hmm. carbonize it, put it into a jelly, put it into a siphon, make many kinds of different things. There are like around between 15 and 20 different textures that we normally play with. And we filter the most interesting ones from the producers, and then I just register them. And then when this time arrives, I open my book or my register workout book, and the process starts, and it's easier for me to develop. You know? And become more challenging.
For listeners that haven't been to Peru or maybe aren't familiar with Peruvian cuisine, how do you describe it?
Sorry, I didn't.
How do you describe Peruvian cuisine?
Yeah, well, Peruvian cuisine definitely is based on family cuisine, sharing food, joy, happiness. Yeah. It always seems about sharing, not sharing moments. Very familiar, no? Mm-hmm. Very tasteful food, happy people, and family. Mm-hmm. Basically, that's, if I want to resume Peru, it would be like that. Sharing, family, and tasty food.
Do you feel like you're making traditional Peruvian cuisine, or do you think you're doing something completely different?
I think that it was something that I was just discussing today. The base for me, to be a chef that is trying to represent Peru and actually is representing Peru, we have some duties, you know, when we work in any... I have a duty of representing my country, my restaurant, you know. And the base of this is to first know traditional Peruvian cuisine. If we go and deep in my menus and my dishes, there's so much traces of Peruvian cuisine, but probably a bit evolved or a bit changed by new techniques or by new aesthetics, and it's 100% Peruvian cuisine. Mm.
So I mentioned in the intro that you opened your restaurant, a very ambitious restaurant in Lima, at 26 years old. Are you still 26, or did you turn 27 yet?
I'm 27.
Okay.
I'm gonna be 28 at the end of the year.
Okay.
So next year,
You're 27 and a restaurant owner. That's incredible.
It was very challenging for me because, I've been working as a cook and lastly, as a chef for my last 11 years, actually. Now, between 10 and 11 years, which I find it was enough time to take the next step. Mm-hmm. I also want to grow, evolve, and have a family, you know. When I'm 36 to 37, and I live a less crazier and more peaceful life, you know, more of a family life. Mm-hmm. So I think it's now the time to rush, taking advantage of our energies, of my energy, you know, mm-hmm. my age, and it's beautiful. It's amazing the challenge that I accepted to live at my age. Definitely changed my life completely, but I enjoy it every day of my life. So I'm really, really pleased and happy for what I'm doing.
We're going to take a quick break, but first, before we take a break, I wanted to tell this quick story about you are so calm and like level-headed about your restaurant. We were on a train to Machu Picchu when I was in Peru, and when we met, and you were on a phone call and you looked serious, and I asked you if everything was okay, and you're like, yeah, you know, I just opened up a restaurant like a couple weeks ago, so things are crazy, but it's fine. And then you just like looked out the window, and I was like, wow, he's very calm. So I think you have the right temperament for the job that you have and for being a chef, and congratulations.
Thank you a lot.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more with Chef Andre Petzias.
Today's program was brought to you by Emmy Cheese, specialty cheese from Switzerland made with heart and passion. Since the early 1900s, Emmy has been a passionate supporter of farmers, cheesemakers, and family tradition. They believe in sustainable agriculture and respect for the people, land, and animals that make their business possible. Remaining dedicated to tradition, they strive to lead the industry in innovation, ensuring they bring you only the highest quality, best-tasting cheese from Switzerland. Emmy is best known for importing more than 80% of Swiss Gruyere into the United States, but that's not to overshadow their other specialty cheeses, including Kotbalk cave-aged cheeses, Appenzeller, Tête de Moine, and traditional Emmentaler. For more information, visit emmyusa.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Heritage Radio Network has plenty more. My name is Coral Lee, and I'm the host of Meant to be Eaten here on HRN. Every week, I look at cross-cultural exchange in food and contemporary media. What determines authenticity? What, if anything, gets lost in translation when cooking foods from another's culture? You can find Meant to be Eaten wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
All right, so we are back with more A Hungry Society with Chef Andre Patsias. So, Chef, let's talk about your background with, you know, growing up. Do you have any, like, early memories of dining? Were there any traditions that your family had?
Okay, so actually, for being really honest, I think I have this kind of life or childhood that I remember seeing my grandma cooking or my mother cooking. I was actually very creative since I was a child. But I always was connected with nature. I was always planting my carrots, my lettuces in my garden, and harvesting them. You know, I remember that's a memory that I have from when I was a child. Yes, basically, then I grew up. I was studying environmental engineering. Looking this connection again with nature. Then I didn't do well because, you know, administration and math and numbers, you know, I'm not so good. So then I moved from career and I started studying agro engineering, which is really similar, but it happened the same. Then I got a bit wild in my 16, 17s and just a couple of years there. And my father actually told me, you know, Andre, you should go and try. This is your last chance that I can support you with your studies. And you can just say, well, then you go and try to study for being a chef. And he sent me to Paul Bocuse. That's where my life changed, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you...
I never picked up a pan or a pot before arriving to Paul Bocuse, you know.
Mm-hmm. You had a garden when you were little. You had carrots and lettuces growing?
Yeah, when I was a child, I remember that clearly. You know, every time my mom, like, I make her holes in her garden, then she covers them, then I make them again and harvest. And I just remember that.
You were a farmer at like 6 or 7 years old.
Yes. Sort of a farmer.
So tell me about going to culinary school. What was that like for you? Like, you know, you had never picked up a pot or a pan before, but you just kind of jumped in. Like, what was that experience like?
Yeah, it was because it was an emotional, mental moment in my life that I was needed to make a change,
mm-hmm.
to my future and. Well, I decided to go there because my father gave me this last chance, and I remember I have the moment saved in my memory that I was cooking, like my chef was making these we're making like bolo red sauce, Italian red sauce, bolognese.
Mm-hmm.
So he got this rondeau made out of copper, really shining, and it was this sunlight beam that went across the whole window of the kitchen, and he was like sizzling starting to fry the shallots, garlic and avocado, you know, and I fell in love of that moment, you know? And from that moment and until now I haven't stopped cooking, and my priorities, my way of seeing life and everything has changed, you know, for good, definitely.
So do you ever have time to, like, go out to eat now, or are you in the restaurant 24/7?
No, I have the opportunity to move, like, one block from my restaurant. So I live one block from States. So it's really, really comfortable being so close. Nowadays, I've established a really solid and concrete team that have given me the opportunity after a long process of working together to probably take have the opportunity to have lunch with my girl, mm-hmm. you know. But I'm normally 24/7 here. Mm. It's my life. It's the only thing I think about every day. So it's hard to let it go, basically. Mm.
When you have a day off or a night off, where do you go out to eat?
Definitely, Sundays I love going to La Mar, which is this restaurant from Gaston, in the same street of the Estatera. Mm-hmm. That's on Sundays. I love having ceviches, whole fishes, really fresh seafood. Mm-hmm. Then I also love... eating in this place called
It's a
Thai restaurant in Lima.
Okay.
But I'm always trying to go and eat in different places.
Mm-hmm. I have a set of questions I ask every guest. Can you tell me about one of the worst dining experiences you've ever had?
One of my worst dining experiences I've ever had?
Mm-hmm.
As a chef or as a client?
Either.
As a client. That's hard. You know why it's hard? Because I normally go in a mood of having fun when I go to eat, no? So definitely analyze everything, but a bad experience when I went to eat. Well, I had one bad experience, I remember, in the beach, but I got a screw on my ceviche.
You had a screw in your ceviche?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it was hard, you know. I bite the screw.
Oh no!
Close to lose a teeth.
Is it hard to go out to eat now that you own a restaurant and you like have to, you know, create exceptional meals all the time? Like, is it hard to go out to eat and just be a diner? Like, do you see things as a chef all the time now?
Yeah, definitely the perspective now is very different. You're always thinking in evolving and growing and trying to take the best of any situation.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I'm having dinner, you know, apart from enjoying food, I'm always like overlooking and overthinking in the things that I'm looking that are around me, that are surrounding me in the restaurants. No, so. Nowadays, if I go to eat, the perspective I have in the table is much more different than I used to have 8 to 10 years ago, which mm-hmm. I don't like, actually, because I enjoyed them more before.
Mm-hmm. So another question that I always ask my guests is, if you could have your last meal in a restaurant, where would it be and who is invited?
I have to have the last meal. Where will be my last meal? Oh, that's a nice question.
It's hard.
That's a really nice question. Yeah, it's definitely really, really hard. Really hard. Do you know what? It can probably be, and it's great, yeah? But I never remember this. It's lunch. It'd probably be at Quique Acosta.
Okay, where is that?
In Spain, in the south of Spain, in Denia.
Okay.
In Valencia. It was one of my first jobs. it's a three Michelin star in Denia, where I have a 42 tasting menu, 42 course menu. Mm-hmm. It was huge, but it didn't sell like that. And it was amazing. The best tasting menu I've ever had in my life. Mm. And I will do it with my mom.
Oh, you would do it with your mom? Okay, just you two?
Sorry?
Would it just be you two, or would you invite other people?
I'm doing it with my mom. Definitely. She's the one that makes everything possible here in the restaurant, and I owe her so much. And I have this amazing connection with her, so if you have to be my last meal, I'll definitely do it with her. In Benia, in that small beach in front of Ibiza, which is amazing. Yeah. I'm really sure with my answer.
And what are you drinking with your tasting menu?
What will I be drinking? A gin tonic.
A gin and tonic, okay. It's very classic.
Yes, I'm a gin and tonic. Classic.
Do you have a preferred gin? Like, is there a favorite combination that you have?
No, I go really classic, really old school.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a gin fanatic. I have here at my restaurant like 73 different types of gins.
Wow.
I love them.
Excellent.
I've been drinking a gin tonic a day. Makes our body healthier.
It makes you stronger. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being my guest today. And can you let listeners know how to find out more about your restaurant?
To see more about the restaurant, you can go to www.estaterarestaurante.pe.
.pe.
And to our Instagram account, which is Estatera Rest. Estatera Rest.
And you have your own Instagram account as well.
Yeah. My own Instagram account is Andre Patsias M. Andre Patsias M.
Thank you so much, Chef. It was great to catch up with you. And, you know, thank you so much for sharing your food while I was in Peru.
No, thank you, Korsha. It's been a pleasure hearing from you again, and whenever you want.
I have to get back to Lima.
Yeah, definitely. I want you here so you can taste our evolution.
Yes, and gin and tonics. All 73.
And gin and tonics, definitely.
Yes.
Thank you, Korsha, for your time. I really. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Chef, and thank you for listening. We'll catch you next week on A Hungry Society.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.